Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to Las Vegas. Tough one for Penn State last night. We'll get into that in a moment. But the big story out here today, you won't believe what happened here last night.
Besides the basketball game?
Yes.
You actually dropped some money in a slot machine?
No. That didn't happen.
Oh, okay. Well, that would have surprised me.
This huge streak goes across the sky last night. Huge streak.
Heard about that, yeah.
I think I got to get out of here. And everybody looked at it and was like, well, is that a meteor? I don't know. Then all of a sudden, we're only 150 miles south from Area 51. So naturally, that was brought up. You know what it was?
Russian space debris. Yeah.
We referred to it as Russian space junk. Burning up in the atmosphere that streaked all the way across California, Nevada, and finally crashed in the desert in Arizona. And it goes streaking across the sky here last time. We're like, you got to be kidding me. Then we find out later what it was. And, of course, you know, the Russians are just right now, I mean, they're just, you know, I mean, forever they've kicked backside in space. I mean, they've been great. Exploration of the moon. No, we did that. Exploration of Mars. No, we did that. Venus? No. Well, they just went past Pluto. Oh, no, we did that. Okay, no wonder this stuff comes crashing down. All right.
Well, Russia actually said, no, it is not any of our things. It must be Santa Claus.
Well, here's one for you. Yeah, I don't think it's the first time TASS has ever lied.
We have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah. But that was last night.
I'll tell you what, it's been a different trip to Las Vegas for you this year, hasn't it?
Oh, it's never a dull moment.
No, I'm trying to put it a nice way, but it's it's been a different trip for you to Vegas this time around.
Well, let's see what they can do. Let's talk about the game first. We'll get to that, and then other things. Kevin has the usual Pro Bowl stuff, which he knows that I'm like, okay, fine.
I just acknowledged it. That was about it.
Used to be a bigger deal. Now it's like, eh. But it's still an honor to be selected. And we also may get a ruling here at some point during the show on Odell Beckham, who might get out of this thing. Josh Norman got fined today. Now, was Beckham absolutely wrong? Yes, there's no doubt about that. He can't do what he did. Can't be tolerated. But there are circumstances leading up to it that I think is the reason Norman got fined. Last night's game, 71-70, Colorado won it. The game, we were off the air at 1:36 this morning because...
Late start.
Well, the Canisius... Louisiana Monroe game went triple overtime, and all the games here are consecutive. There's no afternoon session, evening session. They're all consecutive, so one then dovetails into that. When we went on the air last night, there was 15 minutes to go in the game between SMU and Kent State when we went on the air. So our pregame show was 1 hour and 6 minutes last night. So the game itself, Penn State played great defense in the first half, but not enough offense, and the game was tied 25-25 at halftime. And in the second half, there was one stretch where Colorado had 6 possessions in a row, where in those 6 possessions, they scored on each one and totaled 17 points. That ends up being a big turn in the game. Another huge turn in the game was Brandon Taylor's 3-point shot. Brandon Taylor had a 3-point shot in the corner, and they yelled, but he was yelling at a fan who had been heckling him, and the official teed him up. And while Josh Scott missed the 2 free throws, point-wise, Penn State was not hurt. It was also the 4th personal foul on Brandon Taylor. And it changed the dynamics of the game. There were 27 fouls called on Penn State last night, 13 called on Colorado. Did officiating play a role in Penn State not winning last night? It certainly had some role. But Penn State, the biggest areas to me were the 17 points in the 6 straight possessions and the 40-27 rebounding advantage that Colorado had last night, including 11 off the offensive glass. Those were the biggest factors in Penn State losing by 1 last night. There's been a rather simple formula for Penn State this year that has come into play as to what happens consistently when they win. Number one. Holding a team under 40% from the field. They had not lost a game this year in which that had happened. They held Colorado to 37.5% last night. So you check that box. The other one was out-shooting the opponent from the field. Penn State hadn't lost a game all year in that area either. Last night, Penn State shot 42%. Colorado, as mentioned before, shot 37.5%. So check that box. But the rebounding one. Penn State only lost one game all year in which they out-rebounded the opponent. And last night they got smacked around pretty good in the glass. That's how they lost the game. As for the officiating last night, again, because of the rebounding disparity and because of that 17 points in 6 possessions, those were the determining factors. And Penn State's offense did not kick into high gear until about 5 or 6 minutes to go in the game. Shep Garner was 1 for his first 10, and then he was 6 for his last 10, and he ended up with 26 points. Josh Reeves had 10 last night. Banks was in double figures again last night. But they need a consistent 40-minute offensive effort. Holding Colorado to 71 is a really good number. Penn State scoring 70 is a good number. As for the officiating, 60% of the fouls in the game were, without a doubt, Penn State's fault. I would say 20% of the calls in the game, maybe 25%, were Colorado forcing Penn State to foul. So now we're up to 85%. What does that leave us with, the other 15%? We're out of position. Guessing a bit, I think, came into play on some. And this included Colorado, too. There was a foul called on Scott last night where Dick and I looked at each other and went, really? There was an offensive foul where called on Devin Foster where he was trailing on the secondary break, got the rebound and scored, and it was wiped out, and they said he pushed off to get the ball. When he was coming down the lane, he didn't touch anybody. He just grabbed the ball and scored. There was the technical foul on Taylor. You pull him aside as the official. You say, look, Brandon, come on. Don't yell. You know, you can't do that. That's good officiating. Nah, teed him up. Then the Penn State players start saying something to the official, and he started yelling back at them. He's like, hey, yo, who's lost their cool here? The players or you? Just slow down. Slow down a little bit. And then there was a tie-up at the end where it looked like they had one of two things. It looked like they either had him tied up, and Penn State had the possession arrow with 7.7 seconds to go, or he walked. It was one of the two. And they let it play on, and okay, and finally a foul was called. Okay. Then Penn State scored at the end to make it 71-70. The ball goes inbounds, and Collier takes the ball inbounds, and Reeves fouls him deliberately, and he took the ball, and he threw it right off of Reeves' chest. I mean, like, boom, fired it right off his chest. Now, I said they should take a look at the monitor to see how much time's actually left, and they also should have taken a look at the fact he threw the ball, boom, right off his chest. But they couldn't. You want to know why? It's where you jump in.
There was no television on that game.
That's exactly right. Fox Sports bought the tournament. They bought this tournament here in Las Vegas and its companion tournament at Thanksgiving here in Las Vegas. And this has been common. ESPN has done this left and right. They've bought tournaments all over the place. Those tournaments in Orlando and so forth. ESPN's bought so many tournaments. The Maui Invitational, the Orlando one.
CBS just had one in New York just this past weekend.
Right. Exactly. Now, why did they do that? Well, you're buying programming. It's a brilliant broadcast move. You buy programming. So for Fox Sports, a great move. All right, why buy the tournament and only air two of the eight games? Huh? What? I mean, I'm not a suit, so I mean, I'm not that smart. I don't wear suits. But come on. I mean, I'm not saying, okay, air Nichols State and Hampton. I'm not saying air Canisius Monroe, even though you have that option. I mean, Fox Sports 1 does have Colin Cowherd on during in the afternoon. I understand that. So for them, that might be something they don't want to bump him off to put on a game where it's not two name brands face-to-face. Fair enough. But in the evening, what do you have on? It was predetermined back in April that no matter what happened in the other games of the tournament before Las Vegas started, and Penn State's two games were Canisius and Monroe, that it was already predetermined that no matter what, Kent State was playing SMU and Penn State was playing Colorado, and the two winners would then play and the two losers would then play. It was already predetermined in April as to what it was. So Fox Sports 1 knew that SMU was going to be playing Kent State last night at 8 Eastern Time and that Penn State and Colorado were scheduled for 10:30 Eastern Time. Okay, it was already etched. They own the tournament. And remember, they also have, now you get this on your cable, Kev, but I don't.
Fox Sports 2.
Why not air it there? And they elected not to. Now, tonight's game's on Fox Sports 1.
Well, now, here's another side of this, Steve. Not only do you have Fox Sports, Fox Sports 1, Fox Sports 2, but you also have the Big Ten Network, which is owned by Fox. Could you not have run it there?
Yeah. No.
What about the Fox Sports app? ESPN runs a lot of things that are just on the internet and not on television.
Good question. I don't know. But they had no TV on that. So, and there was another bet, really bad call last night, and it was a goaltending on Donovan Jack, where it went up, and Jack really almost like took it out of his hands and just boom, flipped it up off the backboard. And they call goaltending. And Dick and I looked at each other and went, are you kidding me? Now, that is not reviewable. I have always said that on unreviewable calls, goaltending in terms of the arc of the ball should never be on the list of reviewable calls. Okay, it's too subjective. But goaltending where the ball goes off the backboard should be a reviewable call. But there's no replay last night, so nothing was reviewable. So that was the case. Look, Penn State lost because of the 17 points in six possessions. Penn State lost because of the 40-27 and 11 offensive rebounds last night. That's why they lost. But you can't sit here and talk about it and not mention that it was one, at times, very bizarre trip down the Amazon last night with those three guys. All right, we'll take a break. They play Kent State tonight at 8. We will come back. Santa Claus is on tonight. Big-ass Claus fan. I believe he's on my flight. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This year marks Sunbury Motor Company's 100th year in business, and we will be keeping the same tried-and-true values we've had ever since we opened our doors, guaranteeing your car buying experience will be smooth and hassle-free. No spinning a wheel for specials you don't need or want. No pushy sales staff pouncing on you as soon as you arrive. No sideshow yelling. Since we began back in 1915, we have strived to be your most trusted friend when it comes to all of your new car needs, whether that's in sales or service. We strive to offer you as many viable options as we possibly can. Sunbury Motor Company always carries a line of few other options auto dealers in our area can compete with. With our inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there should be no problems with finding the right vehicle to fit your needs. Our friendly and trustworthy staff is knowledgeable in all of our products and stand ready to answer all of your questions and meet all of your needs. In honor of 100 years in business, SMC is introducing the all-new Auto Club, where Sunbury Motors will pay you for every mile you drive. Be sure to ask us about our Auto Club benefits. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza and at sunburymotors.com. Proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915.
Welcome, great to have you back. We're headed to the bottom of the hour. Nathan Davis on today. We'll also have Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. Now, our show next Tuesday, we'll have Jack Ham on it. It's his birthday, by the way, today. Today is Jack's birthday on this, the 43rd anniversary of the Immaculate Reception.
That better be on today in sports history, too.
It will. It'll make the cut. I have a story. And also on the 29th, Jack Ham, Chris Soleri, Lansing State Journal on the college football playoff semifinal. We're also going to have Dick Girardi on the show as well. So, and also Mark Weiser from the Athens Statesman Journal will be on the show for Georgia. That's the Tuesday show next week. Then Todd Sadowski, Trey Bauer, Kerry Stroh, and I round table on the Tax Slayer Bowl on the 31st. That's next week. Kevin did a great job lining all these people up. Bottom of the hour news is next, then This Day in Sports History, followed by Nathan Davis on Bucknell basketball. Let me look to the skies and see if anything else is falling here in Las Vegas.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Happy holidays from all of us to all of you. Nathan Davis in just a few moments. First, this day in sports history. It was on this day in 1972. The Immaculate Reception with Franco Harris took place. Talk to Jack Ham once about that. You know where Jack was? I mean, when that happened?
On the sideline.
On the bench and never saw it.
Really? Wow.
He never saw the play. He said, all of a sudden I heard everybody yelling and screaming. I didn't know what it was about. Steve, I got up. I went down there. I went, well, holy cow, we won the game. Now, the next week, your intrepid troops were outstanding the next week and allowed a 70-yard fake punt beat them, but that's okay. That seems to be lost in the wash. It's the Immaculate Reception. Larry Seiple, fake punt. Remember that one, Kev?
No.
20. I'll just run for 70 years. That was actually the reemergence of Bob Greasy. It was really odd because they just rotated who had the conference championship games. They didn't do it by record. So the Steelers hosted the Dolphins in the AFC championship game on a rotation, even though the Dolphins were undefeated. And Earl Morrill really struggled in the first half of that game. Remember, Greasy had broken his ankle against the Chargers in the fourth game of the year. And Earl Morrill was the quarterback most of the undefeated season. Then, against the Steelers, Morrill was really struggling. And Greasy was healthy again. And Don Shula changed quarterbacks. And then Greasy led them in the second half. The Seipel fake punt was the big play. And then, of course, Greasy was the starting quarterback in the Super Bowl when they beat the Redskins. But, yeah, it was 43 years ago today, Immaculate Reception. And, by the way, today is my broadcast partner Jack Ham's birthday. We've already been in communication.
He was born on Immaculate Reception Day. That's cool. Well, obviously, he was born first, but...
Oh, and now to save the show, Nathan Davis, the head basketball coach at Bucknell, who can now step in and save this segment. Coach, welcome. Great to have you with us.
It's good to be with you. If you want me to save this, we got a big problems here.
Fortunately, I don't set the bar real high, so we're good to go.
All right, sounds good.
All right, you played last night, and then you've got a game Sunday. So how do you handle Christmas with the players? Do they have to stay? Did you give them a little time? How did you decide to handle that?
What we did was we obviously had a lot of parents in town for the game and things like that, and so we allowed them to leave, those that wanted to, right after the game with their families. We had a few guys come back and left from here this morning. We have one kid from California. Actually, his parents came to town and stayed, and then they'd be back to practice at 6 o'clock on Saturday night.
Okay.
So look at about 3 days.
Look at
about 3 days.
Sunday.
Right.
That's good. What are some of the common threads that have bothered you during this stretch that you know you need to clean up before the Patriot League season starts?
Well, the two that stand out, and I think they're pretty obvious, are being able to consistently get stops when we need them. And the second one, and even really this is probably more important than the consistently getting stops, is to be able to not have, we've been playing good teams, and so your margin of error is pretty small. And we have consistently had stretches of 3, 4, unfortunately last night ended up being 7 or 8 minutes where things weren't going well and we couldn't get out of it. It wasn't that it was timeouts were taken, got media timeouts. We just couldn't get ourselves out of it. And when you play a team as good as Princeton and you let them get on that run there, that stretch, you're in trouble. Outside of that, we were right there, but we had that stretch of about 6 or 7 minutes where we just did not do anything well at either end and couldn't get ourselves out of it. It happened with Mount St. Mary's a week ago. We were up big at halftime, couldn't get out of it at the start of the second half, and next thing you knew, it was a close game again. I can go right down the list. Every game it seemed that there's been that stretch. We haven't been able to find our way out of it, and that's when we got to correct. We got to get better at dealing with adversity and being able to execute when it gets a little hectic out there.
So, in other words, you got to get that 34 good minutes of basketball and get it to about 38.
Correct. Absolutely. I'd like to get to 40. I'd like to get to
right.
40.
Yeah.
But if we continue to work at it, continue to stay after it. We're still relatively young. We have a couple seniors that play, but a lot of the guys that play a lot of minutes, it's a little bit new to them. But you can't accept that as an excuse and make an excuse for it. We've got to get better and do a better job with that.
When you do hit droughts offensively, Coach, do you see that at times then eventually affecting defense?
Oh, without question. When it's just our mentality of our guys. We thrive off seeing the ball go in the basket. And we're working on becoming a team that doesn't matter whether we're scoring 90 points or 45 points, we ought to be able to beat you. But there's no doubt right now that when we miss shots or we struggle a bit offensively, it carries over and the frustration carries over to the defensive end.
All right, now let's flip it to the other side. What are a couple of the common threads that you're seeing consistently that have been good for you?
Well, I think even despite the way it went yesterday, the first thing is we've practiced pretty well. We've gotten more consistent with things. I thought it was important last night with the way the second half went that our guys showed fight. I mean, we were down 20 at the half. It could easily fold it up. And so we're going home for Christmas and we'll deal with this later. But we fought back and ended up winning the second half 48-41. So that showed that we have a desire and a fight in us to compete. I think that offensively, you look at us and we pass the ball really, really well. We have tremendous balance between inside out, can do a lot of different things. We got to continue to take advantage of those things. So, I mean, there's a lot of things to hang our hat on that we can be good at and take pride in, but we've got to obviously work on the things that we don't do as well to get where we want to go.
How are you doing right now in transition? Your transition from taking defense to offense, and then conversely, them taking in and attacking you with it.
Our transition defense has vastly improved. I think it's actually okay. In the last few games, we've been better defensively in transition than we have offensively in transition. And we need to keep that defensive transition up, but get better in transition offensively, without question.
All right, now moving forward, you got Fairfield coming up. You're going to do a lot of work on this. How important is that game to set the tone with the Patriot on the horizon?
Well, I mean, right now, with at 3-7 where we are, where we've been in really every game other than two, that we need to win a game. It would go a long way for guys' confidence and things like that, and just to feel good about it again for a little while. And go to bed one night feeling good about yourselves would help, but at the same time, it's just one game. And it's not going to make or break us whether it goes either way. If we win by 40, that doesn't mean we're going to win the next game either. So we just got to focus on getting better on Saturday when we get back and playing as well as we can play on Sunday and seeing what happens.
And you're playing a tough non-conference schedule, and you do that deliberately. It gets you ready for the Patriot. What are some elements of this schedule that you think right now have made you Patriot ready?
Well, I think having gone into games where you're playing good people, and so you can see what you need to work on. If you go in and you play a bunch of people that you can just roll the ball out there and you're going to win, you're not going to find out where your flaws are until it's too late. So we've had a chance to see what we need to do defensively. We had a chance to see different styles of defenses. We had a chance to see different styles of offense. So as far as what we're going to see in the league and as far as what people run or scenarios from game to game, being up big and having to come back or having people come back on you to being down big and having to fight and come back to playing close games down the stretch, I mean, every single scenario we've now seen. So hopefully that will give us some confidence moving forward.
Give me a couple of players that you think that are better basketball players now than they were a month ago that you can see them develop before your eyes.
Well, I think one of the ones that stands out specifically today is Stephen Brown, a kid that's starting point guard for us. He had 10 points, 8 assists, and 1 turnover last night. That's a pretty good night. And
wow.
If he can continue to do things
that's
like
really
that.
That's a really good night.
Yeah. If he can continue to do things like that, I feel confident we're going to be pretty successful. He's a guy that obviously was starting at the end last year, but still wasn't, even when he was starting, wasn't really playing the games down the stretch. So a lot of it's been new for him. There's been times Zach Thomas has been strong. It hurt us a little bit yesterday. We had one of our freshmen, Nate Jones, suffered a concussion in practice on Sunday and was out. But he's a 6'5 athletic wing that can guard multiple positions, which is an element that we need. And so hopefully we'll be able to get him back soon. Obviously with a head injury like that, you got to be careful about it. But hopefully he'll be able to go home for Christmas and recover and get back and get through the concussion protocol and be able to rejoin us soon.
I was talking earlier today about quarterbacks. And I was mentioning how they're bright now, because Manning's out right now, that there are two quarterbacks I think that know probably where 20 of the 21 chess pieces are in the field besides themselves, and that would be Roethlisberger and Brady. How many of the chess pieces on the floor do you think Stephen Brown's starting to see right now? Is he starting to see all nine? Is he getting close to that stage?
I don't think so. I think he's probably, if you want to look at it, he's probably about at 5 or 6. I mean, he can
Got
be really,
okay,
really
that's
special.
Fair.
He can do a lot of things. He can shoot the ball. He's so fast. And he's actually a good passer. And so he's got a lot of his basketball was ahead of him as long as he keeps working at it. I would have said when we first started games, he was probably about 4. Now I'd say he's in the 6-ish range. I'd like to think in another month he'll be at 8. So as we get to the end of the season, we're looking at where he's seeing everything.
Yeah, okay. I completely understand that. Post-play. How are you doing a good enough job defensively in the post of having people maybe start 2-3 feet outside the block, or are they establishing position that's really good in the post against you?
You know, as I would have said again, early on we were not doing a good job with that. We're better at it now. The problem is that we're still allowing them to get to that position they want to get in the post once they get the ball. And so we got to be better with our one-on-one defense, be better with our help around them to try to keep him from being able to get the ball where he's got a foot or two in the lane. We are making them catch it for
now,
a while, though.
Now let's flip it to the other side. Are you guys getting the ball on the block with at least a toe in the lane the way you like it, or does that have to improve?
I would say, I mean, it obviously has to improve. It's not where it needs to be. We should be doing better than that. But we are doing a pretty good job. We have good balance, but I think we can do better with that. And once we start to do better with that, it will actually open up a lot of things for other people, even more than they are now.
Well, Nathan, I think it's really great that you're back here in Lewisburg with us. And we wish you and your family nothing but a great holiday season. And best of luck when it comes to Sunday's game.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays to you and everyone out there. Appreciate it.
Nathan Davis, head basketball coach at Bucknell, coming back. It is Festivus. Kevin Ayers' grievances next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report. We'll talk about the Steelers in the next half hour. Next week, Jack Ham on the Tax Slayer Bowl. Dick Girardi on the Big Ten season. Mark Weiser on Georgia football all next week. And Chris Soleri on Michigan State, Alabama next week. We'll also have a Tax Slayer Bowl roundtable with former Nittany Lion Trey Bauer, Todd Sadowski, Kerry Stroh, and myself. That'll be on New Year's Eve. Those are next week's shows. Kevin's been working the Midnight Oil to line up guests. I figure we'd use them. It's now time on this December 23rd, Festivus, for the airing of grievances. Kevin, you may go first.
Well, I just the only grievance I have is with Temple last night playing poorly and losing to Toledo in the Boca Bowl. Should not have missed that one. Temple was ranked. Just it's just doesn't make any sense. Now I lost my perfection. I'm really disturbed.
Is this the? I should ask Roger and Drew whether this is the part I should inform you about the lack of perfection part.
And my other grievance is with the NFL. I still don't understand how a team with a losing record can still host a playoff game.
That is
ridiculous, right? You
know, yeah, that's something where. Who was I talking to about that? Oh, it was with Keith Ergo, the associate basketball coach. Ergs is a huge Redskins fan, and the Redskins are turning into one of the really, I think, really good stories of the year. Jay Gruden's done a great job with them. Kirk Cousins is maturing as an NFL quarterback. Reed, you had brought this up back in September. You thought Reed had a chance to be one of the best tight ends in the league. You're absolutely right. He has developed into one of the best tight ends in the league. Defensively, they're playing well. And down the stretch, success breeds success. And the Redskins are playing better now, in part because they've had a taste of success. And they're believing. Now, they have the big game with the Philadelphia coming up on Saturday night at 8:25 on NFL Network. I think that's going to be one heck of a football game, but the Redskins are playing great football right now. Great football. But I was saying to Ergs, I said, you know what's ironic is that under the rules, they would host a playoff game. And you know, I said, idealistically, it should, you know, when you only play 38% of your total games in the division, which means that 62% of your games are out of the division, then once you get to the playoffs, it should be a 1-6, regardless of whether you won your division or not. In other words, being a division champ should be the ticket to get you in, but once you are in, it's a 1-6 scenario in terms of seeding because 62% of the games for everyone are played outside the division.
You're completely right.
That's my
your way in.
That's my reasoning.
A 7-7 team at this point, their only way to the playoffs is to win the division. If you're looking for something to make winning the division valuable, and that's kind of the way I heard the NFL say, we want to make winning the division valuable so you get a home game. Well, guess what? If you're 8-8, winning the division gets you in the dance. That's pretty valuable to me at 8-8.
Agreed. I think that's well put. And I agree with that completely. And that is the value of winning the division. It opens the door to get you the pathway in, because the Redskins are not going to have probably the sixth best record in the NFC.
And you can take care of the problem.
And the Houston Texans won't have the sixth best record in the AFC.
Well, and you can take care of the problem by having a team with a winning record winning the division and host. You know, let's say for the sake of argument, the NFC East, the Redskins were 10-6, just for the sake of this argument. All right, they would still host a game. But you wouldn't have the debate, even if the wild card had an equal record. Then you could go back and say, well, you know, here's where winning the division matters. But if you don't have a record that's any better than any other team, including a wild card, there should be no way you host, even if you won the division. There should be an asterisk in that rule.
Well, no, I just think it's very simple. You win the division, you get an automatic bid into the playoffs. And then the next two best records overall get you in. And that's the simple part. Now, these stupid websites here are constantly, every time you bring one up to read it.
I thought maybe NORAD was tracking Santa already.
No.
Sounded like a lot of wind in the magic radio.
I was just checking out the Manning Osweiler situation, because, Manning's out. Because, if he had a full tear of the plantar fascia, he could play. But because it's a partial tear, it's an odd injury. If you have a full tear, you can play.
I don't understand how he practiced last week.
Right. Well, he practiced, but then they shut him down Friday.
I mean, he wasn't even in uniform on Sunday.
No, that's because on Friday they shut him down because it was hurting too much again. I mean, you could practice on Tuesday. What's the biggest thing about practicing a guy on Tuesday? What's the biggest part of that?
I don't know.
How do they feel Wednesday? That's the biggest part.
Okay, I see where you're going. It's
always the reaction to the injury. Okay, you get out there, you do a few things, and then everybody's wondering, okay, how are they Wednesday and Thursday? Has the pain returned? Is it ultra stiff? There's a bunch of things that come into play. It's the reaction to finally getting some work. And obviously, he had some work last week, and he finally got some work in. That's why they didn't play him. That's why they're not playing him now. He can't play; it hurts too much.
But you know what? When you watch the Broncos right now with Osweiler though at the helm, obviously it's not the same team. And I think it's because he has not handled the call at the line of scrimmage as well, because of his lack of experience, as well as a Peyton Manning, as well as a Ben Roethlisberger did on the other side of the football against them.
Well, that goes back to the question I asked Nathan Davis. What did I ask him about Stephen Brown? How many chess pieces does he see? Does he see 9? Does he see 4? Does he see 5 or 6? He said 5 going on 6. That's good. I mean, as a young player, that's a progression. In the NFL right now, with Manning now out of the mix, and Drew Brees probably out of the mix, right now, I'd say there are 3 quarterbacks right now that are playing, because Brees might not play. There are only 3 quarterbacks, in my opinion, that know where the other 21 chess pieces are.
But that's also the drawback of playing this kind of an offense. And the Steelers found this out when Ben Roethlisberger got hurt. It's very hard for a backup to come in and be able to do the same thing when you're calling the play basically at the line of scrimmage. And I think that's what we're seeing in the second half of these games with Denver right now.
No, I disagree with that. That's not the point I was making. The point I was making is that they know where all the other chess pieces are, so it allows them to make decisions, not just at the line of scrimmage, but in the play itself. Most other quarterbacks know 14 or 15. Many know just 10. It just comes with time. So that really wasn't the point I was making about calling plays at the line of scrimmage. No, that's part of it, but not all of it.